KUCI. It makes me wanna. 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 KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.
The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. To find out more about this talk show or other talk shows broadcasting on KUCI, log on to our website at kuci.org or check out the latest program guide.
Good morning, Irvine. You are listening to Get Notified, where we talk to you about what's going on in the world of social media. Today, I'm super excited because we have one of my favorite guests who talks about one of my favorite subjects, which I really wish I knew more about, but I know I'm going to learn a lot today. His name is Jason Fishman, and he's a senior vice president of a digital marketing agency that stands for DNA, and it's Digital Niche Agency. It's very creative. He's been in the business for a long time. He's worked with a lot of people. And the buzzword of growth hacking has been thrown around as of recent, but not everybody knows exactly what's going on with it. So today we're going to be taking a deep dive into the digital world when it comes to growth hacking. And we have the one person who will let us know what is happening with it. For those of you who are just tuning in, it's a good thing because it is just after 8 a.m. and here at Get Notified at KUCI, we talk about things social media. We talk about talking online, we talk about talking offline, and more importantly, we help to clear the fog. We love people who love social media and want to get better. We love people who also hate social media. And we love those of you who are still genuinely confused by it. And today, we hopefully will make things a little bit more clear. Now, I should have Jason on the line. Jason, can you hear me, sir?
Absolutely. Thanks for the warm introduction there, Ryan.
Well, very warm. And you know what? I would like to, on behalf of UC Irvine, the Regents, and all of California, as well as the larger United States, including its borders and beyond, as in the entire world, happy birthday, Jason.
Thanks, Ryan.
What a great day. You're starting off, getting up early, and you are going to get all of the work done today before 9 o'clock, and then you can just shut off, turn the phone off, figure out what you're going to do, and celebrate your day of birth. How's that sound?
That's the plan. I'm in.
Well, for those of you who are into social media, growth hacking is something that maybe you've heard about. Maybe you've Googled it. Maybe you've never heard of it. But it's literally a type of strategies or a variety of strategies to help grow your social media, get more eyeballs, and things like that. Now, Jason, I am looking forward to hearing you today because I've seen you speak all over the place. I've been to your Marketing Mondays at Expert Dojo. I heard you at Digital Hollywood, and you have so much information. I think our biggest challenge is going to be holding you back to give us information that's enough for us to understand. So that's a good problem to have. Why don't you give us just a little background on yourself? How did you get involved into being this creative digital agency mastermind guru person? And then we can sort of step through what growth hacking is. We can talk about some of the generalities between the platforms. We'll have a nice organic flow of hopefully some really key nuggets for our listeners to take away.
Absolutely. Let me start with the story there. Basically, I'm a marketer. I've been doing this for about 10 years now. I actually got into it as an action sports specialist. I had a background with skating, surfing, snowboarding, lived in Mammoth for a while, and when it came time to, you know, figure out what I wanted to do after school, I wanted to work with my passion and, you know, made the right relationships, was actually brought in with a creative agency to work on their action sports accounts and had the opportunity to work with a lot of the top brands in the space, Volcom, Nike 6.0, Amp Energy. Was working on a video sharing platform at the time. Those projects were doing well. That video site specifically was built up and acquired and was promoted to other accounts at that agency that kind of focused on the millennial audience, back then it was called Gen Y, going after the Gen Y audience. So, you know, right out of the gate, the question on my mind every day was, how do I build the audience for these brands I'm working with? How do I get more people aware? How do I get more people engaging? How do I get more people converting? And that leads to the whole growth hacking strategy. But, you know, so over the years, that question was presented to me in different formats. I then moved to a traditional agency, was more on the business development side there, you know, working with the new business team, speaking with different prospects, and being able to talk about the strategy to get them set up with that agency. I then moved over to a social gaming company, Branded Entertainment. Basically, was with them from the time it was the idea on a whiteboard through their seed capital round of $3 million, and you know, with a large volume of different license acquisition meetings, we were looking to build relationships with groups with over 10 million Facebook followers, looking to monetize that audience with a freemium Facebook game and the sale of virtual goods. That kind of brought me into algorithms, tying to revenue, and being able to make aggressive projections on what audience members are worth and how that could be communicated to overall growth of a company. And during that time, we partnered with an advertising sales firm. Games were backed up in development. Marketing plans were built. I jumped over there, and that's where I spent the bulk of my career, in advertising, mobile and tablet advertising, to be specific. We were working with a technology platform at that sales firm, and they were producing digital magazines for the top print publishers, over 1,500 print publishers, most of the biggest names in the space. I was then able to sell advertising across channels of these different apps, these different newsstands, and that gave me the opportunity to work with many top 100 advertisers, travel the country, sit down with the associate media director at the biggest agencies, work with them on their mobile and tablet strategy, and this was kind of the early days of iPad. So, you know, really was able to bring experience and different, out-of-the-box concepts to the table with these brands. Got a strong understanding of what worked and what didn't work. And that is basically what set up DNA. I actually was one of the founding partners of DNA in January of 2014. And basically doing those same type of approaches, but for startup to mid-stage businesses. We also work with some bigger agencies on some larger accounts. But being able to focus on companies of that level is very exciting, very rewarding for me. Basically, we start with the marketing strategy, move over to content marketing, then to advertising, throw in some influencer marketing, and then look for different strategic partnership development, which I would say is the focus of growth hacking for me, and get to really be a part of the team as they hit all of their milestones.
And then you woke up and it was your birthday.
Yes.
Wow.
Fast forward, birthday, and I'm on the radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, I told you this man is full of punches. And I want to start sort of from the top, and then I believe that I have pulled some sort of structure for us out of what you talked about. So it's all very exciting. Now, first off, you lived the dream. You were skating, snowboarding, surfing, and you took that and you developed a career around it. Is that correct?
That's correct.
We're talking here out of UCI, and we have tons, I think 8,000 graduates that just graduated, and I'm pretty sure that 7,999 of them are very jealous and angry at you right now. Because think about that. You literally took what you enjoy doing and you turned it into a business. So this is a lesson for anyone out there. Whether it's Aaron who loves ballet, you can turn a business into something around ballet. And I think too often people jump into the corporate world maybe with something that's not as paralleled with what they really like. So I'm inspired by that. I love to skateboard. I love to surf. I'm not as good of a snowboarder, but anything going sideways downhill, I'm all about. And I want everybody to think of what they love doing. Social media could be a reverse engineered way of getting involved with that in the real world. Now, that opportunity didn't exist 20, 30 years ago, but every single brand, every single platform, every single sport, even tennis, they all need eyeballs, they all need ears, they all need customers, they all need clients. And essentially that's what you did, right? You said, I've got to, if you can control bringing people to these different companies, then that's where the value is that you created. Is that correct?
Exactly.
And then once you've established yourself and you have other people pay you to learn what to do and what not to do, that sort of propelled your career into everything from advertising to sales to marketing. And then, full story, you took all of that experience and you said, you know what? I can do this myself. And you started your own company with other partners to do exactly what you started doing, but now you're the boss.
Yes. In few words, yes.
Hey, choose your words wisely because they are powerful, and yes is my favorite word. So we're on the same page here. Okay, perfect. On the show, we have this term that I call GTO. It's not a fast car. It means grandma time out. So before we dive into this, and when I say dive in, I love what you said at the very end of your biography, and it was that you start with marketing, then you build into content marketing, that leads to advertising, then at that point you're ready for influencer marketing, and overall it becomes this plan of strategic development. So I think that's a great step-by-step process. But before we get there, GTO, growth hacking. So explain growth hacking to me and to Aaron and to Angie, who are both also in studio and they're waving to everyone. GTO, growth hacking, what the heck is it?
You got it. And you know, it's a misused term in many different contexts. Kind of like the word, you know, viral marketing. People say, hey, we want a viral marketing campaign. But you can't control that. You can't say, hey, I'm going to spread this virally. It's the effect of word-of-mouth marketing at exponential levels. And the same is true with growth hacking. What I would really, encourage focusing on is different options that could lead to growth hacks, growth hacking, if successful. And basically, to do growth hacking, you need to have a growth model. So as I said, marketing strategy, marketing plans, that's where you want to start. And included in that, I would, you know, recommend having a growth model. Hey, this is how many users we're looking to have month 1, month 3, month 6, month 12, month 18, month 60. This is how many customers, this is how many leads, this is how many video views. Whatever it is you're looking to measure, you should have a growth model. As I said, and I'll emphasize again, it starts with the marketing plan, starts with the marketing strategy. There's this quote I use all the time, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. And I stand by that.
Your
plan can always evolve. Your plan can always get stronger. But you want to have that model to base it on. With that growth model, you can then say, all right, how do I hit the month 3 levels in month 1? How do I hit the month 12 levels in month 6? How do I hack this reasonable structure to growth, to success? How do I get there quicker?
Okay.
And there's no concrete answer to that. That's where growth hacking comes in, and you're going to be putting together a list of tactics that, if successful, can deliver those type of audiences, those type of results in a much quicker period of time. And that's what successful growth hacking is. And you know, I have a few examples from some large companies everyone's heard of that's done this that I could get into today. But that's what they did. That's how they basically obtained, you know, high volumes of users, very large areas of market share, and basically disrupting an industry by you know, accelerating through their growth model in a much quicker period of time.
Okay, so let's go back to grandma real quick. Imagine your grandma in her kitchen, because I still think that explanation, though it's amazing, I think it's still over grandma's head. If grandma's in her kitchen and she's looking at all of the appliances and tools that she has,
sure.
What tools and utensils or pots and pans or kettles or burners or stoves or toasters, what is something in the kitchen that grandma can relate to when it comes to growth hacking? Now, the way that I'm thinking, you've got a strategy, so it's got to be something that, you know, you actually, if it's a measuring cup, you've got to know what you're going to measure, right? But then a measuring cup, maybe that's not enough. Maybe a tea kettle, because you fill it up with water, and then, you know, is the growth hacking the actual stove? Like, let's think creatively from a utensil or something in the kitchen. What is growth hacking when it comes to kitchen appliances or elements?
Sure. You know, a rough analogy there would be, you know, putting together your recipe.
Okay.
And looking at the time it's going to take to complete. And maybe looking at a microwave as opposed to a stove or an even longer method.
Ooh, I like that. Wait a minute. I think that's it. I think we got it. I think I understand. Growth hacking is like a microwave. Prior to, you'd have to form the you still have to formulate the recipe before you put it in there, but it accelerates the amount of time that you're going to get your food done.
Yes, and I'd say it's even healthier than a microwave as well.
Okay, so maybe like a convection oven or one of those toasters that. Ooh, what about the new wave? Do you know the new wave, like the infomercials where you put your chicken in it and it's got like it blows the hot air and it cooks the chicken in like half the time?
I haven't seen it, but I'm sold.
Sold. After this call. All right. So growth hacking is a healthier microwave to get your food cooked faster and healthier.
Yes.
I love it. See, grandma understands that. And again, here at Get Notified, we're trying to notify people that social media is not doesn't have to be high level, high brow, and that it can be understood by even a grandma. Now, because this is a show about social media, will you please share with our audience how they can send you some Twitter love, and then we'll make sure that Erin here, who's out live tweeting, is going to be taking the tweetable nuggets and she'll be sending them out into the world.
Sure. So I'm at Fishman_Jason. I always spell out my last name. It's FISHMAN.
Fishman_Jason. Awesome. And I am Ryan Foland. That's at Ryan Foland. On Instagram, I'm Ryan.Foland because somebody else named Ryan Foland took my Instagram handle. But that's okay. I'm sure he's a nice guy, has a great name. For all of you who want to know more about what's going on at KUCI, you should follow them at KUCIFM. They're also on Instagram at KUCIFM. A lot of great things that are going on here, a lot of great shows. And one of those shows is Get Notified, which you are listening to on your drive on the 405. And by the way, Jason, I found out or I realized why the 405 is called the 405.
What is that?
It's because you go either 405 miles an hour. All right. And you know what? The freeway, this is great. Think of the freeway as, I guess, your path to the direction that you want to go with your business. You know, you want to get people to travel on this freeway online to get there. And sometimes there's crazy traffic, or sometimes there's an accident, or sometimes there's something that goes wrong. So growth hacking essentially is letting you maybe use technology like Waze. Like Waze is a growth hack to get around traffic, right?
Yes.
Okay. So let's imagine that we are anybody from a student that's trying to build our own brand to a recent graduate who has a job and is working for a new company and wants to impress them, all the way to Angie, who is now our newest employee at the Office of the Vice Provost of Teaching and Learning, helping to coordinate social media. I believe that the growth hacking in general can sort of work for everybody. Is that correct, conceptually?
Yes, to some extent, absolutely. Whether it's their personal brand, different projects, based on the issues they're doing at a company, yes.
All right, so where do we start? If literally we're sitting here going, all right, I understand that it's a healthy microwave and it's going to make me get faster to my goal. What is the first conversation that you have someone, and what is that first step?
Starts with the marketing plan. Starts with the marketing strategy.
Which one? Marketing plan or marketing strategy?
Both different words for saying the same thing. The marketing plan is just really the strategy in a set format.
Okay, so what does that format look like? Is it a written format? How do we discover what that would be? Is there a template that we work off of? Literally, we're dealing with grandma here.
Okay. Yeah, so basically, there are different templates available online. But I could walk you through the main sections of the marketing plan right here.
Yeah, let's do that.
But if someone, you know, is looking to do this, just as simple as Googling marketing plan and picking out a template they like is a good starting point there. But what you want to be able to do during this marketing plan, and one of the steps that really sets up the whole stage for your company, for your brand, and we do this for companies at various levels, not just, you know, ones that are starting, is a industry research and a competitive audit.
Industry research and competitive audit. So you want to, before you go anywhere, you want to find out who's out there already and what they're doing.
What they're doing, exactly. A lot of times we'll speak to brands and they say, hey, we know who our competitors are. And I start referencing some of the places that they're advertising. I start referencing some of the things they're running on social media, some of the responses they're seeing. And those brands who are direct competitors, or at least, you know, close in the space, have no clue about the conversations that are being had online. And to me, that's what social media is really about, is the conversation. If you're coming at it dry and just starting to run a promotion, just starting to run different information on your product and looking to gather an audience, it's going to be inauthentic. If you understand what all the players in the space are doing, if you understand what all the players in the space are running, what's producing their actual traffic to their websites and apps, what's producing their actual, you know, business, whether it's users, sales leads, having understanding of exactly how they're producing it. Because I'll tell you right now, they didn't get it on first try. They right. had to go through lots of different optimizations, lots of different tests. If you have an understanding of what is working for them today, you're going to be, you know, standing on their shoulders, if you will.
And they're spending a lot of money to do that, right?
Oh yeah, big brands can run hundreds, if not thousands, of landing pages, basically where a link from social media or where advertising is directing to. They can run hundreds or even thousands of landing pages a year just to find a slight increase in the conversion rate, the actual response that landing page is seeing.
Okay, Jason, GTO landing page.
Landing page is the page a website. I'm sorry. Landing page is where a social media link, you know, the little website that a social media post is directing to,
okay.
or that an advertisement directs to. So if I see an ad on Facebook, I click on it, that page I end up, that's the landing page. If I see a social media post and it says, check out this new product we have, and I click on that social media post, the page that loads next, that's the landing page.
And that landing page usually only has one solid call to action, and you scroll down and you're like, I want to know more information about these people, and it just says, like, click here or put your information. It's a capture page, right?
Yeah. The concept of a landing page is to get users to do one thing. So whether that's signing up for a webinar, whether that's purchasing a product, whether it's submitting an email address to get a white paper, be entered into a contest, that is the goal of a landing page, to make a simplified process to do one thing.
Okay. Let's go back to this marketing plan. You either find one online, but what's more important is that you start with doing research about your competitive research. You do not want to reinvent the wheel. Ladies and gentlemen, do not reinvent the wheel. Stand on the shoulders of your competitors and use it like a leapfrog.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's say that I've done my research. How deep do you research? Do you shoot for my 10 top competitors, or like do you go for indirect and direct? Because some people could get lost at that step, right?
Yeah. Let me touch on that for a minute. I write a lot of these things. And with some brands, with some industries, with some products, it's very easy to find information. With others, it becomes a bit more difficult. So I really shape that based on what I'm finding. I try to look at least 5 other brands in the vertical, in that industry, or in similar industries. A lot of times working with startups, they say, hey, I have no competitors. This doesn't exist at all. In that scenario, I just want to find similar industries. I want to find similar types of products in other industries. I want to find something that is modeled the same way.
Now, bringing this back to the university for a second, each unit or each department is essentially its own business, and I try to explain that to them, and I think that they get it, but sometimes we live in our own bubble, and what you're saying is that if your department or if your division on campus, and let's say you're the Study Abroad Center, you can actually go out there and do research and competitive research on all the other study abroad centers in all the other schools across the U.S. and the world even, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. What are they posting on social media? Do they have an email newsletter? What does it say? How often? Are they running advertising? Is it on Google? Is it on Facebook? Is it banners on websites? Is it sponsored content on different websites? Are influencers talking about this?
And
are different organizations talking about this? Are they using strategic partners? What are they doing that's working?
And you mentioned something that's interesting, because once you find these competitors, if they have a newsletter, I'm assuming you can sign up for it. And they might be sharing industry news that then you can share, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I'll get into content marketing, but to touch on that real quick, there's a concept that every business is now a media publisher. Every business now has the ability to post on social media about their industry, be positioned as a thought leader in their industry, and then, you know, one out of every 5 posts, one of every 10 posts, when they want to self-promote their product, their brand, the listening of that is going to be at a higher level because they're already positioned as this industry expert in giving valuable information to the community.
Right. And birds of a feather flock together, anteaters all hang out together, and if you are associating yourselves in these same hubs, inserting yourselves into these same conversations, you don't have to reinvent that market. You just have to get noticed, right?
Yes. You just have to be part of that conversation.
Okay, so we have our marketing plan, which starts with an effort of researching other competitors. And are you just taking notes? Are you doing this in an Excel spreadsheet and you're just kind of gathering the info?
So most marketing plans will have different sections to fill in. If you're doing this from the business plan level, there's different products that'll do this. The Small Business Association, SBA.gov, has a great business plan template, and there's a marketing plan within there, and there's different sections you fill in. There's something called Live Plan that'll ask you questions, and you fill it in and it puts in these sections. But the key in what you're touching on there is you have an industry overview, and you could kind of fill in with bullets, light sentences, even some small paragraphs if you think that's the best way to communicate it. But you have an industry overview. Then you have a description and some bullets on each of the competitors. Description and bullets on each of the competitors. And then the format I would use is a SWOT analysis. And the GTO on that is
thank you
strengths,
for calling
weaknesses,
GTO on yourself.
Opportunities, and threats. Meaning, what are these brands doing that's working? What are they doing that's not working? What threat does that have to our brand? What opportunities does that leave for our brand? Because remember, we don't only want to do what they're doing, we want to stand off their shoulders. We want to say, hey, this is what they're doing that's working. I noticed these type of posts or this that they're running that's not really working. What if we twisted it and did this for our brand? Something to that extent is, you know, what you really want to be able to accomplish with a good SWOT analysis.
So you're drafting like in biking or racing or car racing or running, and you're running behind the leader, not out there in front, but seeing what they're doing, and at the right move, at the right time, you can make your move. Okay, so you've got your SWOT analysis after you've evaluated your competitors. You're putting this information down, and it's really this thought process that's making you aware of what's out there. What do you do now?
So from that point, I look at the target audience further. I start building out personas and profiles. That could be part of your industry research, and you know, but basically the audience is next. Target audience, profiles, and personas. You want to look at characteristics, you know, different demographics, and then behavioral traits that would define your target audience, who's in market for your brand, who's in market for your product or service. And you want to take all this information with the industry and the target audience, and you want to start building out marketing channels.
GTO marketing channel. GTO marketing channel.
Audience. Yeah, yeah. So what are the ways we can reach this audience? And, you know, by putting yourself through this process, there is, you know, a saying that reading gives your thoughts breath and writing gives your thoughts precision. So you'll be inspired. You'll have an understanding of what channels your competitors are using. You're already going to know a lot of this right out of the gate. And then you can research marketing channels if you don't have enough ideas. But the marketing channel is already laid out for you by what you've seen in your research and the places your target audience is going. By channels, I mean, where is your target audience online? How can you reach them using those different channels? So I generally, I'm a big advertising guy because you can reach very high volumes of people in very small periods of time, and more importantly, you can scale what's working. If you see a channel really working, you could double the budget. You could triple the budget and see double, triple the results. It's extremely effective. But let's say we're using advertising. You could look at search ads on Google. You could look at social ads on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, Reddit, YouTube. You know, you can run social ads. You can run display ads. And with that, you want to say, hey, what websites do my target audiences go to? What mobile apps do my target audiences use? Where can I reach these guys online? Social media, same type of approach. What channels are they on? What pages are they engaging with? What hashtags are they using? You know, how do I get noticed from my audience, you know, using the focus of today's conversation. How do I get noticed from my audience where they already are?
Jason, GTO hashtag.
So, hashtags are crucial in terms of growth hacking or building an audience in general.
But what are they? Remember, you got to explain to
Jason, what is a hashtag?
I'm just setting up the conversation here, Grandma.
Okay, sorry.
The hashtag allows you to be part of a conversation. It's a number sign. What was formerly the number sign is now a hashtag. And it allows you to be found by people searching for a given hashtag. So if I put in, you know, hashtag marketing plan, I can then see people who are using hashtag marketing plan and what they're doing. Maybe they have a great, you know, tip for a marketing plan, and they finished their social media post with hashtag marketing plan. So basically, if I look up hashtag marketing plan, it's going to be a whole list of people who have posted in sequence with the most recent appearing first using that hashtag. I've used this a lot with locations. There's times I'll go up to Mammoth for the weekend, and it'll say, you know, I'll look hashtag Mammoth. And it's a whole list of people posting, hey, on the way up to Mammoth, hey, just got to Mammoth. And I can see some of my friends who just got to Mammoth. I can see, you know, other people I may know. I can meet up with them, connect with them, whatever it may be. It allows people talking about the same topic to be found, to connect. So if you're using the right hashtags, you can be found by, you know, high volumes of people who have never met you.
So it's like a form of eavesdropping.
It could be looked at like that.
But in a positive way. Like
creating opportunities to connect.
Okay, so creating opportunities to connect through common words that would link either locations or experiences or conversations together.
Exactly.
All right, so we're going to take it back to the beginning. We have a brand or a business or a department that we want to promote. We first start a marketing plan instead of just going out into the marketplace. Once you understand your competitors and the competitive environment, you then look at who you're targeting. And you might be able to have an idea of who you're targeting based on that the competitive research, right? You see the people that they're after.
Yeah.
You define those channels, or you call them personas. And those are literally your target audience.
Yeah.
One of the things that I it just makes me sort of laugh and get frustrated at the same time is when people use the A word and the E word. Now, this is an FCC regulated show, so we're not gonna get crazy here. But the A word is anyone, and the E word is everyone. Talk to me about your thoughts on that. Should you be targeting everyone and or anyone? And what is the importance of knowing exactly who it is that you're after?
Great question. And yeah, you want to be extremely focused in building your audience in the initial stages. You can change those target audience profiles that you're going after, but let's say we're just talking about geolocation, because that's a huge, huge section of targeting is geolocation.
It's a good filter.
Are you targeting people in Irvine? Are you targeting people in the U.S.? Are you targeting people globally? What many, you know, brands are finding is if they, you know, launch city to city, market to market, let's say they have a community-based app, it's a lot easier to, you know, have an engaged audience with, let's say, 1,000 users in Irvine than 1,000 users nationwide. You could picture, let's say it's Uber, 1,000 users nationwide, people are going to be waiting for cars for a long time. 1,000 users in Irvine, that's a working marketplace. And that's actually what you know, these different groups do. And you know, speaking to Uber for a second and talking about targeting and knowing their audience, Uber targeted tech meetups in Silicon Valley, in the Bay Area. They sponsored different events. They offered free rides to tech professionals attending those events. Why? They knew what target audience they wanted to go after. They wanted ambassadors for their program, evangelists. Hey, guess what I tried last night? This new app, Uber, it took me to my event. Their friends say, hey, this is a tech guy. He knows what he's talking about. This is something real. And using the voice of these people they are giving free rides to, they started building a presence in the tech community. That then spread word of mouth marketing, peer-to-peer marketing is what you want to create with any of this. It's how growth hacking or viral marketing really grows exponentially. And by doing it from the right people, doing it from the right voices, they were able to build a large enough presence in their, you know, San Francisco market. And then they do kind of groundwork before launching a new market. They obviously can't until they have enough supply for any type of on-demand economy. There's a supply and demand section of the app. Supply, in the case of Uber, is Uber drivers. Demand is the riders. So they have to, you know, build up a large enough audience. But if they didn't do hyper-targeting and who they're looking to reach and how they're looking to get more people onto their platform, they you know, could be getting mixed different levels of people nationwide and not having that community type effect. So going after a given community, going after a specific audience is crucial for getting traction on your platform. You know, whether it's, regardless of the type of company, it's crucial for getting everything set up and getting a good loyal audience.
I echo those comments because the sooner you can figure out that core target audience, the quicker you can get in front of them, the less money it costs to get in front of them, and there's more of a peer-to-peer sharing within those people because they're all similar. So you've got your marketing plan started, you've done your competitive research, you've done your persona, and you're finding who those early Uber users are, and then you talked about social media channels. Now, real quick, if you are just joining us now and you finally realize that you're running late and you're in your car speeding, slow down and realize that this is information here on KUCI at Get Notified. We have Jason Fishman, an expert digital marketer, and we're talking about growth hacking. And it all starts with a marketing plan. So the marketing plan is something that you should do before you go to market. There's templates, but we're really talking about looking at competitors, finding out who your target audience is, and then now we're on looking at these channels. I think some people get intimidated by how many channels there are. And I talk with people, and it almost seems like analogous to this who's your market. They think that they should be on all channels. So would you agree or disagree that it's better to be on more channels that have maybe less frequency from your content point, or less channels with more content that you can focus your attention? Because let's be honest, we only have so much time. And when you're on Twitter and Facebook and Snapchat and Instagram and all these things, it sort of spreads you thin. So sure. How do we determine what channels are appropriate for, you know, this content or this effort that we're going to put out there into the world?
Sure. So to touch on the overview of that, channels just give us new audiences to tap into. It doesn't mean anything unless we have engagement on any of those channels.
Just ooh, I like
posting
that.
Posting across 20 channels but having zero engagement isn't really going to do anything. It's going to show someone who's researching you that, hey, you're posting everywhere, but they're also going to be able to say, hey, they're not getting engagement anywhere. It's better to launch, you know, one channel. For example, I'll actually recommend more, but it's better to launch one channel and have really good engagement, have a really good audience, and just focus there, then have, you know, 10 channels set up with, let's just say, mediocre engagement. I'll touch on influencers briefly a bit later, but there's some social media influencers that we work with, and the GTO, an influencer, we define as someone with 50,000 to 50,000 to about 2 million followers. We look towards including in marketing campaigns, and that means they have a large audience on social media. The most important thing we look at there is engagement and type of response they're receiving from their audience. But there's some social media influencers who are only on one social media channel. They're only on Instagram, or they're only on Snapchat. And it's for that exact reason. It's for the theory of, hey, if I have, you know, one place of you know, contact for my content that I'm putting out, and I have a good, engaged, preferably large audience there, it's more valuable than if I have a more diluted effect across a lot of channels.
I think that's inspiring for people out there who might be intimidated by being on a lot of channels. You're mm-hmm. saying it's more important to have engagement than anything else. I love the fact yeah. that you said channels are useless unless there is engagement. And I've seen people with 90,000 Twitter followers and no posts are being liked, no posts are being retweeted, and it looks like kind of a Walking Dead. Like, I'm afraid to jump in there and like it because there is no engagement.
Yeah. The followers, the likes, the audience, those are just indicators. They're not validators of engagement. They're just indicators that, hey, something happened to get people to take this action. Though, again, what we're really looking at is a consistent, engaged audience. You know, not even just one thing or the other, a consistent across all different measurements. Likes, comments, shares. There was ways to buy likes. There's ways to buy post likes. But if there's not good activity following these posts, there's not comments, if there's not a steady amount of engagement, it says something about what's being done there. But, you know, in context for the brand, and to your question on, you know, how many channels someone should use, the focus is engagement, have a good channel. And then for me, I see other audiences available to a brand by using other platforms. So let's say a company has their Instagram strategy down. They have it to an effective level, and their Instagram audience is growing. They're able to get good amount of engagement for each post. Maybe they want to look at doing the same thing on Twitter and tapping into people who primarily use Twitter. Maybe they want to do that on Facebook, although there's some limitations on reaching your full audience on Facebook. Maybe they want to try to figure out Snapchat. That's where, you know, all the kids are now, right? Well, let's figure out Snapchat. And, you know, many brands have not been able to nail that down. There's been different approaches to it, but maybe it's time to start looking at Snapchat. And with simple variations of the content that you're putting out on these social media channels, you can take it to a different social media channel and therefore hit, you know, more people, more of an audience there. That's the whole purpose of using multiple channels in context to social media, is how do we reach people who are, you know, on Reddit as opposed to Instagram, you know, five times a day. How do we reach people who are pinning? How do we reach people who are on Pinterest all the time that may briefly check their Instagram? That's the whole purpose of taking it to new channels.
You hear that, ladies and gentlemen? Hear this once, hear this twice, hear this three times. Likes, comments, and shares are indicators, not validators. I like it. So don't be jealous if you see somebody with a whole bunch of likes, because they might have bought the likes. It's not about the likes. It's about the engagement. And those people who you want to be engaged are the customers that you've identified that are your target market based on your market research as part of your marketing plan. So, Jason, we've got our marketing plan now together. Are there any other key components to the marketing plan before we move on to maybe the next two steps?
Yeah, let me finish up on the marketing plan real quick, because it touches into the next four steps perfectly. I mean, the marketing plan is really the whole roadmap, and from there it's activating. So with the marketing plan, we've done the research. We've started looking at marketing channels. We now want to build the actual plan. What channels do we want to use? What are we going to do on those channels? If it's got, you know, paid components to it, if they, you know, you're buying advertising on these platforms, how much are we going to spend on each channel? If that's the case, what are the projections? And whether it's paid or unpaid, what are the projections? At what time do we think we're going to be at, you know, this level of followers and this level of engagement? At what time do we think that's going to produce this level of traffic and this level of conversions for us? And a conversion, as I've mentioned a few times on this, could be a sale. It can be an app install. It could be a video view, a completed lead form, whatever you're looking to measure as your key performance indicator for your campaign. But, you know, what level of performance can we anticipate from each of these channels? What level of projections? What level of growth? That's where that growth model comes in, because it's saying, hey, we're going to be using these channels. This is the level of performance we anticipate from those channels, and this is how it's reflected as a growth model. This is how we're planning on expanding.
I like it. Did everyone get that?
Yes, yes, yes.
And realize, for those of you who are loving this information, and for the first time through, it's maybe a little difficult to comprehend, this will be available as a podcast afterwards. So this information you can listen to as you get up in the morning and you go to bed at night. All right, so we have a few minutes. We have more than a few minutes, but we have four steps left. So let's do about 2 minutes per four steps, and this will be like a lightning round. I think that the most foundational part is this marketing plan, and I'm really glad that we set that foundation. So let's do a lightning two-minute round. Ladies, can we get a two-minute timer? One of you want to be a timer? Okay, they're going to do a timer here. And Jason, this is your chance to give four steps in 2 minutes each, and we'll have a little commentary in between. Okay, so we've got our timer ready. The next step after your marketing plan is...
content marketing.
And content
and
marketing, you have
laid out each of these sections. They're all going to sound familiar to you, so this two-minute section is perfect.
Okay, cool.
Content marketing is about creating good, engaging content that is designed for social shares and high authority links. What's a high authority link? It's a publisher or an influencer, someone with authority online, talking about you, talking about what you're doing. And that's the goal of content marketing. I recommend putting together a content calendar. So you've done all the competitive research in your plan. You're putting together a content strategy saying, hey, these are what these guys are posting. This is what we're going to post. These are the channel. And picture an Excel spreadsheet saying, this is the content. This is the date that it's going out. Maybe this is the theme. Every Monday we're going to post about, you know, marketing. Maybe this is the theme for Monday. And then here's the actual post. Here's the text that we're going to use. Here's the image or video that we're going to use. Then picture different columns for the channels you want to distribute that on. Facebook, Twitter, Vine, YouTube, whatever it may be. Different, hey, this one's going on Facebook this day. This one's going on Instagram that day. These columns could also represent email, a PR blast, PR press outreach, influencers. You want to basically have this as your whole map of what content's going out, your content calendar. This can be created on a weekly level, a monthly level, or even a quarterly level. I would generally recommend a weekly or a monthly level. And this doesn't limit. This doesn't say, hey, this is the only thing we're posting. It's saying, this is what we're posting, you know, as our plan. We can move this around. We could add to it at any point. We could add different hashtags. If there's some events that occur, we can, you know, add to this at any point. But, you know, think of what you can reach with your reach with your target audience that they then are going to share with five of their closest friends. How can you create that type of activity from them? How can you post something to me where I'm then going to share with my brother, my girlfriend, my partner, my coworkers? Like, what can you post that's going to create that? What value is it going to provide me and provide me to then share with others? And that's the goal for good content marketing, which is obviously a major part of growth hacking.
And time. Excellent job, sir. That was literally 2 minutes. I gave you an extra 7 seconds. Fantastic.
Appreciate it.
Okay, so take a deep breath. Whew, that was a lot of brain power that you spit out there. And one of the main takeaways that I took was this content calendar, understanding, having an idea of what you're going to put out there. And there's so many people that just think putting stuff out there to put stuff out there is going to create traction. But again, if you don't know who your market is, and you don't have an idea or somebody to stand on their shoulders to see what is already working, there's a very low probability that just posting for the sake of posting will work.
Yes.
All right.
Exactly.
Now tell me what the next step is, and then I'm going to give you the go button. So what is the next step?
Advertising.
Advertising is the next step. Is our timer ready? Yep, Angie says she's ready. And action.
Advertising allows you to pour traffic into the funnel that you created with content marketing. With content marketing, you're positioned as a thought leader, you're putting out all this great content, all this great stuff, you need to get people over to it. You'll be able to post to your existing social community through hashtags and different mentions, you'll be able to drive more people over to it. But with advertising, you can go onto Facebook and literally say, hey, I want people who follow my competitors' brands. I want people who follow pages in my industry. I want people in these geolocations at these ages and this household income level to receive this post. And you can literally run it as an advertisement on their newsfeed. It'll show up as if you guys are friends and it's appearing in their newsfeed, except it'll have the word sponsored next to it. And you can basically take as many eyeballs as you'd like to that piece of content. That is simply for pouring traffic into your social media posts. The same can be done with any level of advertisement and to any area of content, whether it's on your site, an email, what have you. But it's basically saying, I want to reach this targeted audience. I want to present this messaging and this image, this actual advertisement to them. and I want to drive them to this landing page, to this URL. Some people use their home page, but as we talked about earlier, a landing page is designed to get users to do one thing, and therefore will carry a higher conversion rate of people who hit the landing page and actually take that action. And with advertising, there's generally opportunities everywhere you reach users online. As I mentioned before, and I'll reiterate, search engines, social media platforms, reach people on their favorite sites, on their favorite apps. There's advertisements you can run through email. There's advertisements you can run, through press and, through different influencers. Whatever it may be, reach them where they're going and look to measure every step of the algorithm. How much are we paying for the ad, the impressions? How much are we paying for the click based on the click-through rate? That's a visitor to your landing page. How much are we paying for that person with the cost per click? Then the actual acquisition, the conversion, how much are we paying for that? And you can imagine if this is a sale, we have clients that have an average order value on their e-commerce store of $60, of $100.
And if
we
can make the time.
Sale at $10, it's effective.
And time. We got to cut you off there just to keep you honest, right? We don't want any cheating here. We let you go a little bit over. But that was amazing. That was 2 minutes of advertising like a kombucha that's just like you put all this stuff in together and it's like good for your stomach, even though you don't think it is because it might not taste that good initially. But you're talking about pouring traffic to a certain place. I love that analogy of pouring traffic. You can target these existing users that you know that you want to get in front of. Okay, so we have build your marketing plan, and then we have content marketing. Wait, was that the second one?
Correct.
Yeah, content marketing, and then advertising. What's the next one?
Influencer marketing.
Influencer marketing. 2 minutes on the timer. Ready, go.
So social media influencers, as I mentioned before, we generally seek out social media influencers with 50,000 to about 2 million followers. We generally look for a minimum of 1% engagement, which means if they have 1 million followers, 10,000 likes per post. 10,000 engagements really combined from likes, comments, and shares. We then will reach out to those influencers. Oftentimes they have an email address, a website, a blog, some form of contact in their bio, and we reach out with a simple email explaining what we do and asking how we can work together. At this point in time, influencers have been contacted so many times by brands that they generally have a specific program with a rate card on how they can post on your behalf. One post costs, this. Two posts cost that. You could probably find opportunities for influencers to post from, a few $100s to a few $1,000s, depending on who it may be. And some of them will request product. Others will say, just send me what you want me to run. And I would recommend running groups of influencers or multiple influencers over a given period of time. Don't run just one. Don't put all your eggs in one basket and hope it's going to work. Our programs, our minimums, start with 10 influencers, so we can try different types of influencers. Let's say it's a men's fashion subscription service, T-shirts coming to you every month. We're going to want to reach a men's lifestyle influencer. We're going to want to reach a men's style influencer, maybe a men's music influencer. All types of verticals that touch your vertical and see which ones are working best. And that steady flow of traffic is designed to hopefully reach your target audiences multiple places. So they say, hey, what's going on? How come I keep hearing about this brand everywhere? This is interesting. And by tapping into that, engaged audience that's in many cases loyal, we've seen very strong results. I've worked with brands that have put on their first 5,000 clients strictly from influencer marketing and had them at monthly reoccurring levels. So it's, a crucial point of their growth.
And time. Nice work, sir. We were right on the button. We have, again, Jason Fishman here giving the steps to growth hacking, marketing plan, content marketing, advertising, influencer marketing, and the final step in 2 minutes is?
Strategic partnership outreach.
Ready, go.
So we use different tools to do this over email. We actually call it email prospecting and automation, where we can basically look up, thousands of different B2B prospects. These could also be influencer prospects or different organizations. But what you want to be looking for is groups that have a large, existing, and engaged audience that can drive high volumes of clients, users, audience to what it is that you're doing. As I mentioned, we we'll look it up on LinkedIn. We'll put together a large list. We'll reference it with the data company. And then let's say we have 1,000 people we want to contact each month. We'll send them a sequence of emails, one a week. And if we're doing this on behalf of a client, we send the warm leads over to the client so they can then set up calls and be able to take those conversations from there. They could generally anticipate 10 to 15 conversations of those a month from this type of outreach. But basically, if you were able to build a strategic partnership, something that's mutually beneficial with another company, with an organization that has a similar cause, even just locally, some type of alliance, if they can do an email on your behalf, if they can build a program to promote your product to their customers, you can see growth unlike any other channel. You can literally see, you know, thousands or more people join in a very small period of time. I'll give you a quick example of Tinder. They did this with sororities. They went campus to campus. They built national alliances. They would get their sorority members on. They'd go across the street to the fraternities, get their fraternity members on. But through strategic partnerships with large national sororities, they were able to get, you know, committed members at a very high rate in a small period of time.
And time. Jason, that was amazing. And if you did not catch the whole show, you've got to catch the whole show. It will be available as a podcast later on. Reach out to Jason. Find him on LinkedIn. Find him on Twitter. Fishman_Jason. Show some love out there into the world to everyone involved. Stick around for our next show, Writers on Writing. Jason, I feel like I have learned a substantial amount, and that means that everybody has learned just as much. We've got Angie and Aaron here nodding their heads. We've been tweeting up a storm. I want to thank you, sir. Wish you an awesome and happy birthday here from KUCI and the entire world.
My pleasure. Anytime. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you. And we're going to end with a little music. Stay around here for Writers on Writing.